Friday, March 18th. Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. We've got a very, very fun show. Guys, when I tell you that we have good emails today, you're going to be like, wow, these emails are so good, so fantasy relevant. We're going to help so many people. It might be the best round of emails we've ever had.
Can I just say something about the emails?
Uh-oh.
Because whenever we do these podcast league things, we get like 4 billion of them.
Right.
And I'm drawn to read a much higher percentage of fantasy baseball emails than I normally do.
Okay.
And I have just been amazed by the number of creative people. And I really, even when people are saying mean things about me, I'm usually pretty impressed if they can do so in a creative way.
If you just
email and say Heath sucks, then no. You suck.
Yeah.
But if you email and say something like explain why I suck and maybe even add some humor into it,
then you might just agree you suck too.
Yeah. We have the best listeners in all of the podcast land.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And we are the podcasts of the people, which is why I like to read a lot of emails and tweets, get your thoughts on here, people. And why you're going to beat my butt in the bracket challenge. I'll tell you that. Yesterday wasn't a good day, but we won't really discuss that. This is an Adam Scott Heath production here on this Friday. Our email address is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Still time to get in the podcast league. We'll be announcing the winners either Monday or Tuesday, and the draft is the following Monday at 8 p.m., the 28th, I believe it is, at 8 p.m., whatever that Monday is. So fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. If you want in the podcast league, please put podcast league in there. But here's our tweet of the day, and it comes from one of our listeners. His name is Heath Cummings. And
nice.
He says, yeah. And he says, wins are the worst fantasy baseball category. Wins are the worst fantasy baseball category. Scott White, your reaction.
I guess I can't really disagree with that. It's the most unpredictable category, the most luck-based category, and those are generally qualities that I don't like adding to any competition. But at the same time,
like I really dislike quality starts a lot as a statistic, as a measurement of how good a pitcher has done, as a fantasy statistic. And the more I thought about it last night and this morning, the more I decided that quality starts are a much better fantasy baseball category than wins.
Well, I do think that wins add a little bit of strategy. You have to look, you have to consider the team. You have to consider the bullpen sometimes. I think it adds a little bit. It is the worst category because all the other categories are fine. But
yeah, I mean,
I don't
everything
mind
adds strategy. Every little wrinkle adds strategy.
No, like
you're strategizing around luck, though. I can't really count on a certain number of wins from any player, so I need to da 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 da.
Yeah. I mean, I acknowledge it's got to be the worst baseball category. I don't mind it, and I think I prefer it to quality starts only because the bar is so low for a quality start.
Right, but
like it's not an impressive stat.
At least it's something a pitcher has some control over himself.
I'm just going to say that Colin McHugh, and Colby Lewis were in the top 10 in wins last year.
Yeah, but look at like who the leaders in quality starts were. There are some. I bet there's some pretty bad names in there too.
Some quality starters.
Yeah, I'm sure there are quality starters in the wins category as well.
There's a stronger correlation, Adam,
for sure.
But look, but Texas. Wait. But Texas and Houston made the playoffs last year, so that's part of the strategy of the wins category. Is you're trying to find pitchers on good teams.
You didn't know at the beginning of the year that Texas was going to make the playoffs.
Well,
you didn't expect them to.
If you thought, but it wasn't fluky that Colby Lewis was among the wins leaders, considering he actually had a pretty good season for a long stretch, and the Texas Rangers were a lot better than we thought they
were. He had a 4.66 ERA and struck out 6.2 batters.
He had a pretty solid season for a long stretch and was very fantasy relevant, other than one or two horrible starts that bloated his ERA.
No, he definitely had more than one or two horrible starts.
That during his fantasy relevant stretch, which I would guess was about 2 months. This is all off the top of my head.
The reason I brought this up was we've hinted around at maybe having a second podcast league.
Yeah.
We have? Wait, this is news to me.
Yeah, you won't be involved in it.
Oh, he can be.
What's that?
He can be.
Yeah, he could. Well, I thought the point of doing the second one was partially because Chris was going to be in the second one.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to have a second podcast league with you, me, Chris, and Al. We've we've got plenty of leagues with you, me, Chris, Al, and Scott.
Well, what if we make it a 14-teamer?
Okay. Anyway, I think it should be a roto league if we do a second league.
Of course it should be. I would like for it to be a head-to-head category.
And I don't think we should have wins.
What do you propose instead? Quality starts?
Quality starts is better. I don't like it, but it's better.
That's fine. I have no objection.
Okay, so we're gonna have this league that's irrelevant to everything we talk about on the podcast, and that's going
taking
to be a podcast.
Taking wins away makes everything else irrelevant.
We can't.
Scott White.
We're
taking
like,
wins
how,
away.
How many people listening play in this league where quality starts are like it's not anything we're ever going
you
to talk about.
You just said it was the least predictable of all the stats. It's the
yeah,
we
but
don't...
it's tradition. It's what people do. Just because I don't like it doesn't change the reality
what
of it.
What you don't like is change.
What?
What you don't like is change.
No, I'm fine. I just don't like when we're supposed to be representing, you know, the predominant view. I don't like
being
on an island.
I don't think we're supposed to be representing the predominant view.
Then who are we talking to? We're talking to
America.
The people who play.
Yes.
Yes. They don't play in this little
what
podunk league you imagined.
What podunk league? Just because we want to get rid of the worst, what he agreed was the worst stat. Okay, I didn't think this was even going to be an argument, but you tried to make it an argument by saying,
I just think that quality starts is kind of lame too. Like,
quality starts are lame, but they're not as bad as wins. And my final point about what you're saying, Scott, you've kind of gone off the rails. I would say less than 1% of your analysis has anything to do with wins. Less than 1% of what you talk about on the podcast has anything to do with wins. This is not going to change anything about what you relay on the podcast because you play in one league that has quality starts instead of wins.
I just like tradition.
Yes.
I like tradition, especially when that's still what everybody does. You can't play that kind of league with your friends. You know, don't corrupt the podcast league with your.
How is it? It's a second league. And
all,
you're
right.
Not invited.
All right.
You
know, all right. All
I'm
right.
I'm starting a new league and Scott's not invited.
Heath is in like Heath form today. This is going to be a true Heath Cummings podcast. I can already tell. I have a nomination for the most overlooked player in fantasy. I checked on Fantasy Pros. He is an outfielder. He is going 51st overall in Fantasy Pros ADP, and nominee here, Alex Gordon. What do you guys think?
I think Scott should answer this.
Well, at least you know when you're going to be biased. So,
no, you agree. I just didn't want to say it.
I agree.
You've got him well above 51st.
I guess I do. But at the same time, I don't think I've drafted him once in any of our mocks, so
maybe you should drop him in your rankings.
I don't know. I'm not particularly motivated to.
Well, what do you guys think? I mean, look, this is a guy that I was calling a bust last year. Was not excited
at
all.
He's just so boring.
Yeah, he is, but
he's so boring. It makes me cry.
He is, but he's also a guy who when he was healthy for 4 straight years, basically playing a full season before last year, he's scoring 90 runs. He gets on base at about 350 clip typically. Last year wasn't a great year, but his slash line was very similar to what it was in 2014. The steals were down. He usually gets you about 10 or 11 steals. Last year, only 2 steals and 7 attempts in like 104 games. But Gordon is the kind of guy that like he might be sitting there around 16 or 17 or something like that. And if he plays 155 games like he did before last year, you probably got a top 30 outfielder. Nothing special, but
you're right.
Bad.
If he's there in round 16 or 17, sure. But what I'm having trouble reconciling is, okay, yeah, so he missed some time last year, but he still played 104 games, and in those 104 games, he scored only 257 fantasy points. And head-to-head is supposed to be his format.
Yeah.
He averaged fewer head-to-head points per game than Nick Markakis. So, what happened beyond the injury? And it's hard for me to decipher from the numbers. It's not like he was exceptionally bad in some way. 13 home runs in those 354 at bats, a .377 on base percentage.
Well,
seem like good numbers. So
I got
what
two
happened?
Things. Two things.
I don't know.
Steals were a little down, like I said, and runs I think were down. 40 runs in 104 games, probably off his typical pace.
So is it just where Ned Yost is batting him? Is that That's
a part of it, but he was not good at all when he came back from his injury. And I don't remember how big, I mean, it was.
But his percentages are good. His percentages are among his better ones for his career.
Okay.
377 on base percentage.
All right, listen, we don't have to belabor it here because we have a lot to talk about. One of the things I want to talk about today is spring training, what it means, spring training numbers, spring training injuries. Do they mean anything? I've done a little bit of research on it, and I want to spend plenty of time on emails. And Scott wants to talk about his breakouts, which we didn't talk about, so we'll do a couple of those. And Jonah Carey on CBSSports.com. You can go to the MLB arena, CBSSports.com/MLB. Jonah Carey gave some breakouts, six breakouts for the 2016 season as well. But I also want to tell you that if your brackets are busted, like mine, you can start fresh with new picks and prizes each round. Kind of a cool feature we have on CBSSports.com. So on the CBS Sports app or at CBSSports.com/brackets, you can, you know, make new picks each round and get new prizes or, you know, be eligible for prizes every single round. So you don't have to be disappointed if things haven't gone your way so far. All right, Scott. So some of your favorite breakouts. Of course, your column is up, but why don't you go ahead and give us one or two? Not Ruut Nederdorf, because we did talk about him on the breakouts podcast a few days ago. Two other breakouts that you really like in 2016.
Well, actually, my column isn't up yet. Oh. There was an initial breakouts column in at the end of January, but there's going to be a breakouts 2.0 next week. Couple of additions to that. The biggest, I think, is Gerardo Parra, whose situation has obviously changed from late January, in that he is a Rocky now in that favorable hitter environment in Colorado with the thin air, the breaking balls that don't break like they usually do from pitchers, making them easier to hit and hit hard. And I think his skill set is going to be one that really takes off in that environment because he makes a lot of contact. Anytime a hitter makes contact there, good things usually happen. And he's always been a high doubles hitter. So in the thinner air, I could see that becoming that translating to more home runs. I'm kind of hoping that Gerardo Parra for the Rockies is something like Shane Victorino was in his prime. And Shane Victorino in his prime was a top 15 outfielder in fantasy. I don't think he'll run as much as Victorino did, but maybe the trade-off would be more home runs, approaching 20 while also approaching 20 steals with a very high batting average and obviously the runs scored in that environment. So I think he's been an outfielder who I like to get in every league, and I find usually in round 14, 15, I'm able to do that.
So you're clearly taking Gerardo Parra over Alex Gordon.
I don't feel like that's been the case. I feel like Alex Gordon is usually gone by the time I'm taking Gerardo Parra.
They're going in very similar spots. And on CBS, I think Gordon's going one round ahead of Parra. On Fantasy Pros, Gordon's the 51st outfielder. Parra's the 55th. They're going very close.
I'd be much more excited about drafting Parra, that's for sure.
Right.
And I probably would take him over Gordon.
One more breakout, Scott.
Drew Smyly.
Yes.
I feel like is one who's kind of slipped through the cracks here. We haven't talked about him a lot on the podcast. But down the stretch last season after he missed good amount of time with a partially torn labrum in his shoulder, he came back and in his six September starts had more than a strikeout per inning in five of them, had double digit strikeouts in two of them. And you combine what he did last year with 2 years ago when he first joined the Rays. So 19 starts as a Ray. He has a 2.52 ERA, an even one whip, and 9.5 strikeouts per nine innings, which is basically the stuff of aces. Obviously, there's some injury risk there. He didn't pitch a full season either of those two seasons. That's why he only has 19 starts with the Rays. But, those percentages are, if he can stay healthy, I think you're talking about a dark horse Cy Young candidate.
Oh, and somebody wait a who, second. He's probably going to throw 150 innings.
I'm saying if he can stay healthy.
No, I mean if he stays healthy, they're going to limit his innings.
Why would they limit his innings?
He's never stayed healthy, and he threw like 75 last year.
Okay, he's coming limit his innings? He didn't have surgery. I don't think he had surgery.
Okay.
I've seen no indication that they're going to limit his innings.
Well, I would be shocked if he threw more than 175 innings.
Kevin Cash last year did show a tendency to yank his pitchers pretty early, other than Archer. I mean, I don't remember. Maybe it wasn't the same with Odorizzi, but I remember dealing with this with Carnes and Erasmo Ramirez. He did not extend them much. Like, what do you think the most innings Drew Smyly could pitch it? Like, do you think he could go more than 180 innings this year?
Well, I would put it at 175.
I think he could, sure.
Okay.
I mean, he did have 153 innings in 2014, so, you know, it's not like he hasn't come close to a full season yet. But
what would you say is the most he could throw?
I if he threw 200 innings, I don't think it would be.
It would be very surprising.
I don't think it would be.
Well, how could it? I'm not saying it's impossible, but it would be a very big surprise for a pitcher that's had the injury concerns he's had, that's never thrown more than 153. It would be a big surprise.
I'm applying the prerequisite that he doesn't get hurt, and like what would he have to average per start to fall short of?
Okay, more importantly.
Yes.
He might get overlooked a little bit because of all these awesome sophomores. Taiwan Walker, Raisel Iglesias, Luis Severino, Steven Matz, guys like that. Lance McCullers, maybe before his shoulder injury. I don't know. I might like him better than all those guys. I feel like he's going later. I can actually look that up. I don't have to guess, but
that's not something you have to feel.
Yeah, Scott, you know, where do you rank Drew Smyly with all those talented sophomores?
I think he is a little behind them, in part because I don't think there's any need to rank them ahead of him. But I do feel, I'm not gonna make the blanket statement. I feel more comfortable with him than all of them, but on a case by case basis, I do feel more confident with him than some of those sophomores. I think he's more proven than them.
And he's in the mists of them. Like, he's probably halfway. There's a long range between Steven Matz, who appears to be the first one off the board, and like Carlos Rodon, who's the last one.
Looks like he's being drafted as the 45th pitcher off the board, and I think that's pretty close to where I have him.
Okay. Keep an eye on Drew Smyly. So I went back. I listened to a podcast that we did on March 9th, 2015, and what I wanted to know was the injuries, okay? And we were going to give out some spring training injuries. Did they have any effect on players in the regular season? And we probably can't draw any conclusions. And over the weekend, I'll try to listen to another one and see if we can get a bigger sample size here. But here's what we uncovered on this March 9th, 2015 podcast. Yu Darvish had an elbow injury and was likely to miss the rest of the season. And, of course, it turned into Tommy John. Brett Cecil had arm injuries, but he did not miss any or much time at all. But he wasn't very good. Lance Lynn had a hip flexor injury. Scott said on that podcast, it doesn't seem like a big deal. It should not affect Lynn's availability. It didn't. He had a very good year.
Until he
had Tommy John, very late. Cliff Lee was shut down with an elbow sprain, and we said it could be career ending. So, you know, looks like we're probably right. We said Drew Smyly may not be ready for opening day due to shoulder tendonitis. So
yeah, more than just tendonitis.
Yep. Now, he debuted on April 24th. He made 3 starts. Then he went on the DL until August and obviously had some shoulder issues. Denard Span had core muscle surgery. He debuted on April 19th and played really well when he was healthy. He had a great April, but battled injuries all year. Josh Reddick was out 3 to 4 weeks with a strained oblique, but you can't really say that it affected him. You know, he was pretty good, at least in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Escobar was out 7 to 10 days with an oblique strain. Now, look, it's the 18th right now. This was March 9th. So it was 8 days earlier. You know, Escobar, 7 to 10 days with an oblique strain. I'm sure I probably was thinking, oblique strain. I don't like it. And not that Escobar was relevant, but he played opening day and he hit 306 in April. So those are your, you know, I don't know if there's anything to take from that, but the whole point I was trying to make was we shouldn't overreact to spring training injuries. Maybe there's something to that here.
I don't think there is a blanket statement to be made about spring training injuries.
I do agree. I think
they have to be a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. A pitcher with a shoulder problem in spring training might raise more red flags than other types of injuries. Because it would raise red flags any time of year, you know?
Yeah. I think hitters with oblique core injuries and pitchers with any type of arm injury.
Right. Two other things that really came out of there that were important. Al, this was on the March 9th, 2015 podcast. Al pointed out, we were talking about Ken Giles. Scott was saying he was one of his favorite closers in waiting. Al points out that Giles, spelled backwards, is Selig.
Very important.
Very Al thing to say, and I laughed. I laughed on the podcast, I think, and I laughed when I played it back last night. And, super important, we haven't talked about this, Scott said that he watches New Girl. And, you know, at the time, Scott, I didn't watch New Girl, but I am a New Girl convert, and it's freaking awesome, and I love it. I'm almost caught up.
It consistently gets a laugh out of me. That's for
great.
Sure.
I've never seen an episode.
Great show. I recommend it.
Okay. I can't decide which of the guys is my favorite.
It's Schmidt. It's obviously Schmidt.
I think it's Winston, actually.
Winston?
But, you know, Nick, I...
Winston, he's the worst one.
What are you talking about? Winston's hilarious.
Winston is the weak link of the show. He's so weak that they clearly had to bring Coach back to make up for Winston. I like Winston, but he's the weak link.
He's not the weak link. He's hilarious.
We just spent 5 minutes on New Girl.
We spent 30 seconds.
Quality starts.
Okay.
You can play in a league with quality starts. I just don't think it should be a representative league.
I don't know that the podcast rejects league, which would be the case if it's a second league, would have to represent.
I would not call it the podcast rejects league.
Well, that's what we called it 2 years ago when we did one.
This is a whole new ballgame.
Okay. So anyway, now that we looked at spring training injuries, let's look at spring training leaders from the last 2 years and see what we can come up with as lessons learned. So I looked at OPS leaders in 2014 and 2015. Let's do 2014 first. Here were your OPS leaders in spring training in 2014. Michael Morse, Alex Gordon, Brandon Belt, Justin Smoke, Lorenzo Cain, Bryce Harper. That was before Cain was good in fantasy. Bryce Harper, Shane Robinson, Howie Kendrick, Mike Moustakas, Mitch Moreland, Lonnie Chisenhall, Jackie Bradley, Chris Getz, Jose Bautista, and Mike Trout. I did not realize just how bad that list was until I just read it back right now. That is terrible.
Oh, Mike Moustakas. He faked me out a couple springs, that guy.
All the Royals.
And he finally came through last year. And I don't think he had a good spring.
Well, he didn't have as good a spring, because here are your spring training OPS leaders in 2015. Mike Trout, Mike Zunino, Curtis Granderson. This one's a lot better. Curtis Granderson, Mookie Betts, Jose Abreu, CJ Crone, John Mayberry, Matt Kemp. Oh, maybe it's not that much better. Michael Morse, Brandon Belt, Stanton, Donaldson, Jock Peterson, Juan Lagares, and Jake Lamb. There's something there.
It's hard to really take anything away from this, except maybe it's too small of a sample size for OPS to have real meaning. I imagine there were some high batting averages impacting the OPS numbers, like, you know, guys hitting .435 or something stupid and unsustainable that made them appear higher on this list.
I have something I can take away from this.
What's that?
You shouldn't take anything away from this.
Yeah.
Well, then I won't even go through the pitchers.
Kind of redundant.
No, I mean, I won't even go through the pitchers, because Daniel Norris, Zach McAllister, Drew Pomeranz, Taijuan Walker.
Is this you not going through the pitchers?
I'm not going through all of them. Chichi Gonzalez, they had good spring training. So,
yeah,
I don't know. What are you looking for in spring training then? What do you care about, if anything?
I'm looking for maybe players who are recovering from injury see how they do. More than pure numbers, though, I'm looking for storylines. If there are storylines that seem to support an uncharacteristic number, it'll catch my attention. If, you know, like a pitcher's velocity is up a few miles per hour, if he's introduced a new pitch to his arsenal, that's
what about
know,
if
baffling
the storyline,
hitters.
What about if the storyline is that he's in the best shape of his career?
That is totally subjective and baseless and usually pretty easy to tune out. Unless there are more specifics to it, you know,
like his abs look really good.
No. I lost this amount of weight and it allowed me to change my mechanics in this way. So now I am locating my pitches better or something. And, you know, there might be something to it then, but just a player who's obviously looking to raise his standing, just saying, oh, yeah, I'm in the best shape of my life. That doesn't mean anything. And you know that. You're just being a troll.
Yeah. I'm not being a troll. I was just asking. You were listing off narratives. I brought up another one. People hear that narrative more than any other.
Heath, you are trolling us so hard today.
I've not trolled you at all.
But he admits he's trolled me.
Yeah, you did. I've trolled
Adam once at all.
You're trolling quite a bit. Injuries, news, and notes. We don't have a lot today. So the Reds signed Alfredo Simon to a 1-year deal. Any interest in Simon if he makes the Reds rotation in an NL-only league? Would you draft him?
No.
Okay.
Now he is bad.
You talked about Mike Moustakas. ESPN had a feature on Moustakas yesterday because this was relevant to what we were talking about yesterday, Scott and Al. You know, Moustakas started hitting the other way. But then he said the pitchers adjusted to him, so he started pulling the ball again. And I know Al had some concerns about what kind of hitter he was. He stopped going the other way in the second half as much, but I think that was a conscious choice by Moustakas. According to this ESPN article, you know, pitchers adjusted to him, so he just said, all right, now I'm going to be myself. I'm going to hit the ball over the wall. So I think if you read it, you could be encouraged.
Right. The results seem to validate that decision, so. Right. I can't hold it against him.
Jared Eichhoff, Philly's starting pitcher, going to make his spring training debut Tuesday. He fractured his thumb a few weeks ago. And is he mixed league relevant? Because he had some really nice starts at the end of the year, Jared Eichhoff.
I think he is. I think he's somebody you can consider with a late pick, particularly in a head-to-head league where you're probably going to roster more pitchers. He's kind of... you know, kind of the kind of sleeper that you know you're basing your decision to draft him on a teeny tiny sample size and probably shouldn't put a lot of stock into it, but a late round pick, why not?
Okay. Ned Yost can break bricks with his bare hands, and he did so yesterday, Heath.
Wow. What do you think of that, Heath?
It's not surprising, really.
Does that raise your stock?
Like, that seems like a very Ned Yost thing to do. Ned Yost can do whatever he chooses to do. He's illustrated that.
And I don't know if you saw the Greg Bird bobblehead from the AAA Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders. Did you guys see it? It was on our site.
No.
It's very cool. It is him like hatching out of a little shell because he's a bird.
That's outstanding. Yeah. There was one other piece of news that came out right as we were starting the podcast.
Is it better than the bobblehead?
It's the most relevant piece of news on the injuries, news, and notes.
Go for it.
Brad Boxberger is out 8 weeks.
Oh, wow.
With a core injury.
So who's the closer to start the season?
That's the question.
Call him me! Sorry.
I think Alex, maybe. I would assume Alex Colomé because he was in line to be the eighth inning guy. But Danny Farquhar has closing experience. And, you know, they've been working to fix him this spring after he had a disastrous 2015, and I think he's had a pretty good spring. I haven't checked the numbers recently, but it's somebody
to... doesn't matter.
What's that?
Spring training doesn't matter.
Everything matters.
Well, yeah, look, actually, if you're battling for a closer's job, then it does matter.
Yeah, right. Everything matters. You just have to have the proper context, and for different players, the context is different.
Here are Jonah Carey's breakouts in 2000. Yeah, actually, do we owe this topic more time? Am I rushing?
Boxberger?
Yeah, like
I don't really think so.
Well, I mean,
because we don't have a clear answer. I mean,
okay, but he's not out for the year or anything here.
No.
So he might miss a month, month and a half, and then you've got a closer that you might be able to get off waivers or in the last round.
Mm-hmm.
Is that reasonable?
Except the thing about core injuries is when you return from a core injury and you're working to strengthen your stomach muscles, you can neglect your back muscles and then have back problems develop because of it. This is basically what happened to Denard Spann's 2015. You mentioned that podcast March 9th of a year ago. We talked about his core injury, and really it was a back injury that messed him up the whole year. So I worry a little about Boxberger's health beyond the 8-week absence. So I think this lowers his stock beyond just the amount of time he's going to miss.
Not to mention, it's not like he's Craig Kimbrell here. If Colome or Farquhar does great in the role, it's not Boxberger gets it back automatically.
That's a very good point.
All right, I'm going to skip Jonah Carey's breakouts. You can read them on the website. We've talked about all these guys. Basically, it's a lot of year two players that he's very high on. So read it on cbssports.com/MLB. And let's go right to our emails and spend the rest of our time answering your questions. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Great emails today, guys. Wow. Dave in Kentucky. He has a deep starting pitcher question. In a 12-team head-to-head points league, the top 80 pitchers are rostered. Have not heard much talk about Jimmy Nelson. Do you see him as a pitcher that could crack the top 50? If not, give me some guys outside the top 90 that could be top 50 starting pitchers. Good call. Jimmy Nelson. I've seen him drafted, so I went and I looked up the numbers. I don't really get it, but you guys go ahead and talk about Jimmy Nelson.
Well, I think if you just look at last year's numbers, it is pretty underwhelming. But if you look at what he did in the minors, especially considering it was the Pacific Coast League, the most hitter-friendly league, and he had a sub-2 ERA his last stint there, I think there's definitely something to be had here. He's working on developing, I think, a more consistent changeup because he doesn't quite have that third pitch that's going to have given the same success in the majors as he had in the minors, but he's getting there. And there were some starts sprinkled in last year where you could recognize the potential. He had a 9-strikeout game, an 11-strikeout game, a couple 8-strikeout games. So I don't know. I think once you get past that group we were just talking about earlier, the McCullers and Raisel Iglesias, Drew Smyly, mm-hmm. you know, the group with slap you in the face kind of upside, Nelson is as attractive a pick as anyone because he has a little bit of a track record there in the minors and some prospect pedigree.
Yeah, my biggest issue with Nelson, and I've got him ahead of the top 90, so if he's out there and available, then yeah, I think he's probably better than your 90th pitcher. But he's got a bad combination of not really striking out that many batters while still walking too many batters. And so he's going to have to, like, could he be a top 50 pitcher? He could maybe sneak into it on a better team, but you were talking about wins. He's not going to win very many games on one of the worst teams in baseball.
But he was a very good strikeout pitcher in the minors. He has in my mind the ideal combination of bat missing ability and ground ball generating ability that I don't see with too many pitchers.
I would temper the great strikeout pitcher in the minors just because, I mean, he struck out a batter per inning in the minors.
More than a batter per inning. It was more like 10 per 9.
It was 9.2 in AAA. He was 9.8 one year, and most every other year he was in the eights. So I mean, and that was not, it's not like he was striking out 9 batters per 9 as a 22-year-old in AAA. He was doing it as a 25-year-old. So I don't.
All right. So let me rephrase the question.
Okay.
When you get past beyond that group they clearly have the upside, who do you like? Who do you think could have the upside, but he just hasn't shown it yet?
Like I said, if we're talking about pitchers that are outside of the top 90, I think he's fine. If we're talking about pitchers that are just past
that
McCullers group.
I have 60 seconds. So clearly that group runs out before you reach 90. Like who do you like? Who do you like that doesn't have the numbers yet, but you think maybe he could?
I think there's more potential upside with somebody like Vincent Velasquez than Jimmy Nelson.
Okay. No, I like Vincent Velasquez's upside too.
As far as other guys that are going, there's not a lot of pitchers outside the top 90 that I like more than him.
I like your number 90 pitcher, Heath, Alex Wood.
I just, where's this 90 number coming from? You have
the
Nelson,
email.
You have Nelson ranked 64th.
It's coming from the email.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Well, I know late round picks. I mean, I would take a shot on Alex Wood, and I think, James Paxton, I have a soft spot for him. I think this is where you look at the prospects too. If they haven't been drafted.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
You know who I kind of like that probably no reason to draft him in mixed leagues, but, Chris Bassett, who had couple nice stretches last year and also good minor league numbers. I think he's getting a little overlooked.
Aaron Nola is probably going to go before that, but
yeah,
if he doesn't.
Next email is from Mike. And Mike says, dear Alex, Ryan, Liam, and Shelby. I mean, those feel like pitchers to me.
I don't know.
With StatCast now available, which measurements do you look at and why? Like exit velocity, launch angle. Do you guys use that stuff?
I don't really. Chris Towers likes it. I'm not sure it means anything to me yet. I don't know that anybody really knows exactly what it means. I mean, obviously, exit velocity is a measurement of how hard the ball is hit, and that it seems like the harder a player hits the ball, the better and more powerful of a hitter he is. That's, kind of a common sense metric there. I think maybe in the long run, we can use that in combination with BABIP to help determine what hitter might be a genuine high BABIP hitter.
I think the way that Chris used hard hit data in one of his articles earlier this year is really pretty relevant. And that was talking about which guys that had a high home run to fly ball rate had a lower hard hit contact rate. Cause that would suggest maybe that their home run totals were a little bit higher than they should have been.
Do you remember any of the names?
One of them was Starling Marte. I remember that for sure.
And he pointed that out about Marte at the All-Star break when we did our All-Star break podcast. And he thought there was some power regression coming, and he was right about Starling Marte.
Yeah, I mean, I think I enjoy diving into this stuff. I'm kind of halfway in between Chris and Scott, but I'm very encouraged about where it's going to take us, especially as we get more data.
Well, where am I exactly? You said you're halfway between.
You said that you don't really look at it very much, and you don't know that it tells us anything yet.
I don't think anybody knows that it tells us anything yet. It hasn't been around for long enough.
I wasn't arguing with you. I just said I was halfway in between you and Chris.
You made it sound like I was somewhere when I kind of committed to being nowhere.
You know, Heath, I have a great team name for you. It combines a lot of the things we've talked about, or two of the things we've talked about on this show. Trolling with the homies.
How about Alcides and Gongfused?
That's pretty good. You did not come up with that.
Yes, I did.
Really?
decided I'm going to use that for my podcast league team name.
Trolling with the homies would be perfect for you.
I really think when we go back and listen to this podcast, you're going to find that I wasn't actually trolling that much.
Okay.
I feel like I've had to be very defensive this podcast, and I don't know if it's just me and I woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning or if it, you really are trolling and you just don't know it.
It all started with quality wins.
Quality wins.
It did.
Alex, Ryan, Liam, and Shelby is a show called Quantico that I've never heard of. Here is a question from Tom. He says, keeper league strategy question. Do you reevaluate your rankings based on who is kept in your league, like multiple elite third basemen are kept, making Nolan Arenado more of a priority because he's available? This is the case in my league where I could take Arenado over Kershaw and Stanton as the next best third baseman left is Beltre and or Franco.
This isn't even so much just a keeper league strategy question. It's positional scarcity, and keeper leagues change positional scarcity. But positional scarcity exists in redraft leagues as well. We talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily change my rankings, but it will. I will reevaluate. Yeah, if there's a huge drop off until the next third baseman, I might go against my rankings.
I think this is a great point. I would take Arenado over Kershaw and Stanton if the next best third baseman is either Beltre or Franco. You're missing Carpenter. You're missing Rendon. You're missing obviously Machado and Donaldson. You're missing a lot of guys there. So I think I would do that.
Yeah, well, I would take Arenado over Kershaw if all the players were available. So
there you go. Next email is Richie in Hollywood. He says, "Hey, Rick, Morty, and Jerry."
This is one I should know.
I know, right? I get that feeling too. But
well,
I don't know.
Rick and Morty is a show. So it's probably Rick and Morty. It's a cartoon. I just did a mock draft today. I took Strasburg as my second pitcher. However, it was very stressful. I don't know how I feel about taking Strasburg in my actual drafts. The next six pitchers to go off the board were Keuchel, Archer, Gray, Syndergaard, Cole, and Felix Hernandez. Keuchel, Archer, Gray, Syndergaard, Cole, Felix Hernandez. I feel like most of these guys are much safer, where Strasburg is the definition of high risk, high reward. What do you guys think about this?
I don't have any of those guys ranked above Strasburg. I don't necessarily agree that all of those guys are safer than Strasburg. So I would take Strasburg over all those guys and feel good about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's about right. I agree.
Email from Isaac. Jose Berrios, is he ready? What are your expectations this year?
The Twins don't think he's ready because he has been sent down.
I think he's going to be probably the second most impactful minor league pitcher call up this year after Tyler Glasnow. And part of that is because I feel like he's going to be one of the earlier ones called up, when others like Lucas Giolito, maybe Julio Urias, who I do see is more talented, or I don't expect them up until much later.
Now, they've said that Urias actually has a chance at the fifth spot, right?
No, I hadn't seen that. There was Jose De Leon had a shot at the fifth spot, but he just got sent down. I don't recall Urias pitching in a while, but yeah, I don't think he's going to be up. He's 19 years old, so it may be a late call up. But Berrios, if he does get called up, he should be enough of a strikeout pitcher to matter in mixed leagues, but he doesn't have, you know, this transcendent stuff that makes it clear cut he's going to be a fantasy ace for years to come.
David okay. in Seattle. You got something, Heath?
Yeah, I did find it. It looks like 2 days ago, Dave Roberts said that Urias was in the conversation for the fifth starter. Mm-hmm. And then it looks like yesterday, Roberts confirmed that there's only four Dodgers still in the competition. And he's not one of them.
He's not one of them. Okay. David in Seattle. I've listened to your podcast for a couple of years, and when you talk about starting pitching, drafting, I frequently get the impression you draft to have a five-starter rotation. I assume that you mostly play in leagues with weekly roster settings, so you only set them once per week. What are your thoughts on the number of starting pitchers you should draft in leagues with daily roster settings? I play in a 12-team league with two starting pitchers, two relief pitchers, and three pitcher spots. That uses quality starts instead of wins.
This is your guy, Heath.
Many players hold
plenty of them.
Many players hold 7 to 9 starting pitchers on their rosters to dominate the strikeouts and the quality starts. Okay, well, this is obviously very popular, streaming starting pitchers. And first of all, the thing I should say is that I would recommend doing a league if you have daily roster changes that limits your transactions per week. I think it should be one a day, you know, to be, you know, seven per week to be distributed any way you see fit. But yeah, you want to avoid those losers who just have more time than the rest of the league, and they just...
Losers is a bad term. You should take that back.
You're right. Those people who just have more time than the rest of the league, and they just pick up the starting pitchers all the time, and they just... Yeah, that's annoying. So limit the transactions.
He can't call them losers?
No, because...
No, that's not right. I shouldn't have said that.
It's not having more time.
It is.
It's paying more attention. It takes maybe 5 minutes a day to go
some
in.
Some people really don't have that. They're
some people
so
really,
busy.
I don't believe that at all.
No, I do believe
I don't believe it takes just 5 minutes. I think it takes half an hour.
Okay. I think in 5 minutes you can go in and change, make your additions.
Well, let's
but
answer the broader
it becomes
question.
Race either way. It becomes a stupid way to determine who wins. So yeah, I agree with what Adam's saying.
I think it's rewarding effort, and I think that we should do more of that.
You're a fantasy analyst. You have more effort. You have more insight. The general public out there, the leagues that I play in with people who aren't fantasy analysts,
right.
I know that I am much more active than them.
Yes,
I wouldn't
but most
be...
leagues don't have people like – don't have us intermingled.
You,
yeah,
so
but,
you
but
want
most
it just
leagues...
to be a race to the waiver wire to see who gets there first? Should somebody get up at 3 a.m. instead of 5 a.m. so he's the first one to the waiver wire for the starting pitchers that day?
Right.
Is that really what you want to be fantasy
I don't
baseball
know why
to be about?
No, I think you should plan better than that. I don't think you need to go pick him up at 3 or 5 a.m. Pick him up the night before.
Well, I still think
whenever okay, so maybe 3 in the afternoon instead of 4. Whatever it ends up being, it becomes just okay. So, who's going to sign on before the others so they can make this move?
To answer this question, I play in a league just like this. I generally keep only one bench hitter on my roster, and the rest are pitchers.
Yeah, I played in a league with the one per day or seven per week transaction limit. And it was a 10-team league, which is a big difference because you didn't have to hoard the starting pitchers because there were so many good ones available on the waiver wire.
Right.
So I did have balance. And actually, to be honest with you, you can use this streaming strategy with hitters as well to win, let's say, any category. Runs, steals, home runs, not necessarily batting average. But any catting stat, it's not as easy as it is with pitchers.
Right.
But there have definitely been situations where I went into the weekend, tied in steals or something like that, and I picked up a steals guy. It doesn't always work, but sometimes you might be able to win a category like that.
Yeah, and I think, if you want to play in one where you only have 3 transactions per week, that's fine. That's good, too. I just don't think there's any reason to, if there's a 10-team league out there where people want to have as many transactions as possible, the whole league has agreed to it. There's no reason for us to call them losers or act like their league is worse than anybody else's.
Look, I was joking around. I shouldn't have said it. It was just me trying to be funny. They're not losers, but I do think there's an unfair advantage because...
What is this ultra PC? When
no, no, because it's true. Because it's true. if you are like that, does it not make you a loser? Wait. Let me finish. Yeah. Please. I just think that in every fantasy league, there are some people who are just busier than others and some people who don't have the time to dedicate it to fantasy, and those people should not be at a disadvantage. It takes away, it should be a little disadvantage. You should reward some hard work, but not to the point where it completely eliminates you from contention because everybody else is making so many more transactions.
I agree with that completely. I just like lots of different types of league. I don't see a whole lot of purpose in playing in 3 leagues that are all the same. I want different rules for my leagues.
Okay.
It's more fun.
Nick from San Diego wants to hear more about Sonny Gray. The industry seems to be universally down on Sonny Gray this year, maybe because his FIP has been higher than his ERA for 2 straight years. What do you guys think about Sonny Gray?
Yeah, I think the industry is a little too down on him. They don't like that he doesn't strike out the hitters in elite. Most of the elite pitchers do. And they don't like, I guess, like you said, the FIP is not in line with his ERA, but there are good reasons for that. And I think he's pretty safe. I think he's a good innings eater type, a guy who I'd love to have in my 3rd starting pitcher. And I think he should have put these arguments to rest with his performance last year.
Yeah, I think the consensus ranking on Fantasy Pros of him is 19th among starting pitchers.
That's where I have him.
I think that's about right.
Yeah.
I will tell you where Gray has finished each of the past 2 seasons, both points and roto. In 2014, he was the 16th best pitcher in points leagues and the 16th best in points, 22nd in roto. And in 2015, he was better. He was number 11 in points, number 13 in roto. So he is going to be better in points leagues because he pitches a lot of innings and does not strike that many guys out. So definitely, like I said, I think that you could make a case that he could be your number one starting pitcher in points leagues if you are waiting and waiting until like the 5th or 6th round. You guys probably don't agree, but
I'd much rather have him as my number 2.
Yeah, I agree. Will in New York is in an auction, and he's in a 12-team head-to-head categories auction. He just wants some auction advice, guys. And I agree with him that it's like you read an article or you watch or look at a mock auction, you can't get the full experience. So my first piece of advice is do an auction. Do a mock auction if you can. Even if you're only doing it for an hour, just get a feel for it. But what would you tell Will in New York?
About just auction advice?
Yes.
That he is very, very right that the stuff that he's seeing is not going to be helpful for his individual auction because they seem to be so different depending on who is in your league and what they value. And there's going to be sometimes, even the top players, we've seen them go, there's been $5 or $6 range for what those guys have gone for.
Yep. No, totally. There's a different mood in every auction room, and you kind of have to get a sense for it early and adjust your plan on the fly. Like if elite players are going for a lot more than you thought they were, maybe you don't target as many of them because you know there's going to be not as much competition for kind of the middle tier guys just because there's going to be so much less money available than was projected to be at that stage of the auction. So that's important. I think the most important piece of advice I could offer, though, is that you want to be, if not the very last, one of the last people reduced to nothing more than $1 bids, because that is such a helpless situation when every time your turn finally comes up to nominate, and you think you have a guy who you could maybe get for a dollar, and then somebody jumps in with a $2 bid, and it's over. There's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. And so you have to wait another whole turn through the order to nominate a guy, and who knows how much talent is going off the board in the meantime. I would much rather be that guy who's jumping in with the $2 bid, or if it's a player I really, really like, a $3 bid before anyone else has a chance to react and, kind of dominate the end game that way. So usually when I know to pull back is when I have about twice as many dollars available as roster spots to fill. That's when I pull back and start playing that jump in for $2 game. And, if I happen to get a $1 player when I nominate, great. That means I can go $3 on another player, but you don't want to go like $4 or $5 and suddenly, have 6 or 7 roster spots to fill for a dollar.
Well, I will tell you all that unfortunately I'm having some technical difficulties with Heath and Scott. So I'm going to end the podcast by myself, and I'm going to read the final two emails and let you all get on with your weekends. John wants to know about shallow leagues. He says, I play in a very shallow 10-team mixed league, head-to-head points. Would you change your draft approach in such a league? And yes, John, I would change my draft approach. We talk about this all the time. In a 10-team league, you want the best available players. The position scarcity doesn't matter nearly as much, so just try to get as many studs as you can. I don't think that means that you should, load up on pitching studs or anything like that, like mix it in pitchers and hitters, but just get the best available players. It's sort of like making 2-for-1 trades where you could do this in shallower leagues. You give up 2 good players for 1 great player. It's the same concept. The waiver wire is going to have plenty of guys available for you to fill in throughout the year. So, 10-team leagues, shallow leagues, get the best available players. And we've got Greg with our final email. He says, hey, Lucky, Dusty, and Ned. And Greg, you've committed a cardinal sin. 3 Amigos is played out. We don't like the 3 Amigos greetings. That might be more of a fantasy football thing there. Pet peeve. But I'm instituting it now in the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast as well. Greg has the first overall pick in a 12-team points league. Which of the following scenarios do you like better? Mike Trout, Corey Kluber, and Joey Votto, or Paul Goldschmidt, Corey Kluber, and George Springer? So with Kluber as your pitcher, you're talking either Trout and Votto or Goldschmidt and Springer. I like the Trout-Votto side much better in points leagues because Votto is sort of a points league, not exactly a specialist, but much better in points leagues because of his on-base percentage. And Springer, as I've been saying, I love him in roto leagues. In fact, in roto leagues, I would rather have Goldschmidt and Springer over Trout and Votto. But in points leagues, because of the strikeouts, I worry a little bit. And, you know, he does have some injury question marks as well. So I would certainly go Trout, Votto rather than Goldschmidt, Springer. The third option is Trout, Kluber, and Posey, and then taking Gonzalez, Pujols, or Freeman with your fifth-round pick. And I would avoid that one. I mean, maybe Scott would say go for it. I don't really like taking catchers. I pretty much neglect catchers. And maybe I'll try to take a higher upside guy like Darnot or Grandal or Mesoraco a little bit later. But I would not go with that. I would do the Trout, Kluber, Votto scenario in points leagues. And I would do Goldschmidt, Kluber, Springer with your first overall pick and your second and third round picks in rotisserie leagues. Thank you all very much for listening. I apologize for losing Heath and Scott, and you have a great weekend. If you had any trouble downloading the Bust podcast yesterday, it is working now. You can go ahead and download that. Make sure you play our Bracket Challenge games on the CBS Sports app or at cbssports.com/brackets. You can make picks every round. You can make new picks. Awesome stuff. I'm Adam Azer for Scott White and Heath Cummings. Talk to you on Monday.